Welcome to the Big Money Questions. I'm Rachel Rickard-Strauss, Personal Finance Editor at This Is Money. Today we're talking about GDP. It's a term that we use all the time. We hear said by economists, we hear it on the news, politicians. But today we're going to go back to basics and find out what actually is it. So we're lucky enough to have Diane Coyle here to talk us through it. She's Professor of Economics at the University of Manchester. She's also founder of Enlightenment Economics. And she's written a book called GDP, A Brief and Affectionate History, But Affectionate History. Diane, can we kick off, first of all, for anyone who's heard that term a million times that has never had the opportunity to go back and say, what actually does this mean? What is GDP?
It stands for gross domestic product. It's the sum of all of the economic activity that happens within the UK economy, or whichever country you're referring to. Mm-hmm. So it's really, at its most simple, just a measure of how much the economy is doing and how much it's growing over a certain period of time. And you have to have GDP for a particular period. Is it this quarter, when it might be a number like 0.6 or 0.3, or is it for the year, when obviously you'll get a bigger figure?
That number that we talk about, it relates to growth, doesn't it? So it's not sort of isolated, but it's in comparison to the previous quarter or whenever it is.
That's absolutely right. We always talk about the growth. And if you ask a lot of people what the actual number for GDP is, very few would know. I think it's about £1.8 trillion now a year. Mm-hmm. But actually, that's not very interesting, as you're saying. And what we are interested in is, are we doing better today than yesterday or this quarter than last quarter? So it's that quarterly increment that tends to get all the focus in the news and in the financial markets. It's also done as an aggregate. So we rarely look at how much is it increasing per head of population, which you think would make sense. Figures that came out today, in fact, as we're speaking now, the latest ones, show a 0.6% increase for the quarter, but a 0.4% increase in per capita GDP. We rarely talk about the distribution as well, which is one of the drawbacks of the measure. But the other thing that worries me when people talk about it, and they put so much weight on is it 0.2 or is it 0.4 this quarter, mm-hmm. it's actually that they don't acknowledge the great degree of uncertainty in constructing the figure, because it comes from all kinds of different data sources. And the Office of National Statistics collects surveys, industry figures. They're for different time periods, some of them have very strong seasonal patterns, and they have to amalgamate all that into one number. So there's actually a much bigger margin of error than the number itself. The margin of error on a 0.4 might itself be 0.8 or 1.
Because it sounds so precise, doesn't it? But you're saying that what happens is the Office of National Statistics gets numbers from here and there and puts them all together, mixes them up with some sort of equation and spews out this particular number. But what sort of data sources do they use? How do they collect the information that feeds into what we see as this headline figure of GDP?
Quite a lot of it comes from different kinds of surveys. They send out surveys to businesses and ask questions about how much are you investing, what were your sales during this quarter. Mm-hmm. They have sources about different kinds of income, not just personal incomes, but business incomes. They look at the financial services sector and send out surveys to all of the banks and financial companies. So a lot of it is collecting surveys. And they are now looking at whether they can improve their data collection sources, partly by having other government departments hand over much more data than they have always done, which needs some action in Parliament, actually, to make that happen. But also using the very fashionable big data techniques. Can you use online resources now to do better at collecting not only more information, but getting it much faster as well?
So it sounds like there's, as you explain it, there's quite a lot of room for human error. If they're sort of sending out surveys to people or to companies and saying, could you please tell us how your sales have improved this month or have they fallen, there's room for individuals to get it wrong or to sort of put in figures that reflect them more favourably even.
Well, that's always been a problem. I remember giving a talk to some people in Manchester a little while ago about GDP and exactly what we're talking about now. Mm-hmm. And a man put his hand up and he said, well, I'm retired now, but I used to work for a very big company and I filled out these forms about how much we'd invested and I just put in the same numbers last time because I wasn't going to be bothered to actually work out what the figures were. So there's always been that sort of human error. if you're looking at growth and that doesn't change over time, that doesn't matter so much, because as long as the level of error stays constant, it won't affect your growth figure. The worry is that because people are getting even less interested in responding to surveys than they used to be, that the uncertainty has increased and we're just a little bit more in the dark about it than we used to be, and hence the interest in finding new and better sources of information.
Yeah. That seems increasingly important, because we do put such an emphasis on this number, and particularly when it's around the margins. You know, the difference between 0% inflation and a negative growth, 0.1%. If we have two quarters of negative growth, then that counts as recession, and that completely changed the mindset sometimes of people and their spending habits, of central banks, of politicians. So it's interesting that there is scope for that kind of variation in the headline figure when it's so important to what we do.
That's right, and it's why I worry so much about the emphasis we put on the figure, because, as you're saying, people have put more and more weight on the GDP figures over time. And it's partly policy making, looking at you say, as you say, at have there been two quarters of negative growth, or even worse, how is actual GDP doing compared to our idea of what potential GDP ought to be, which is a kind of theoretical construct. Mm-hmm. So interest rates get set according to that. The government's judgment about the gap between taxes and spending gets set according to that. But there are also other uses. Contracts in financial markets might be linked to some measure in relation to GDP. The Greek government's repayments of debt and the austerity it's having to impose on people were linked to its deficit in relation to its GDP. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, in fact, there's a court case in Greece against the previous statistician, chief statistician, who was put in place by the International Monetary Fund to sort out dodgy Greek statistics that they had made up before the crisis. And because there's so much weight put on what the actual GDP number is, his opponents have taken him to court in Greece with something that might carry a prison sentence if he were found guilty. And it's extraordinary that so much reliance is placed on this number that has all these uncertainties that we've been talking about. And actually, it's a kind of concept. When you're measuring GDP, you're not measuring something like the height of a mountain or how hot it is today. You are measuring a theoretical construct anyway. And those definitions have been very different in the past than they are today.
I want to go back, because your book is a brief but affectionate history. So for all its flaws, you still feel an affection towards the figure. Can I ask you what is good about it, or why you particularly like it?
I wouldn't want to throw it away. It has, for me, two really big flaws, apart from all the practical difficulties that we've been talking about so far. One is that it doesn't take account of the distribution of incomes. And one of the things we know about the past decade or so is that well-off groups of people have done very well out of the economic growth that there's been. Mm-hmm. But there are large swathes of people in all countries who haven't seen any improvement in their living standards over the past decade. So we need to look at distribution. And we need to look at how much we are using nature to have growth today. And we haven't taken account of how much pollution is being put into the atmosphere, how much clean water is being spoilt by industrial processes. So we ought to have a measure that takes account of those as well. But having said that, also measuring how the economy is doing is a really good indicator of all sorts of things that we care about. It's really strongly linked to improved life expectancy, better health, greater sense of well-being among people. And it's kind of human nature, isn't it? We want our children and grandchildren to have better lives than we do. And so that sense of progress, of economic progress, is important. And voters need to hold their governments to account for whether or not they're delivering that. So that's hence the affection. We need something.
Okay. But there seem to be a few groups of people who consistently take issue with the number. One, as you say, seems to be environmentalists, because if you're boosting GDP by building things or people renewing their kitchens every 3 years, in the headline figure of GDP, that will look good, won't it? But whether that's good for the environment is another issue. But another one, I think, that you mentioned in your book is the tech industry. What's their problem?
They are concerned that they're not being measured well enough in the GDP figures. And it's partly about the weight that they get in government thinking and in policy making. because for any industry to be able to say we contribute 6% or 8% of GDP, whatever it might be, is something that gets them heard in policymaking circles. And that's important for industries because governments have so many regulations, they can really affect how well things are going for business. And it's partly that. And the tech industry feels very strongly that they are delivering massive improvements in how quickly microprocessors work, the cost of communications and how fast that can go. They can see the engineering gains that they're making, and that isn't reflected in what appears to be their contribution to the GDP figures. And so they have been one of the sources pressing for all these better measurement approaches that we were talking about a little while ago.
I suppose the reason that it doesn't feature in the way that perhaps they think it ought now is because it's so new and GDP is a number that's been around for decades. I wonder if you could talk us through where it came from and how long we've had this, you know, formula for putting different statistics all together and weighing them and coming out with this one number of GDP.
The actual definition that we use dates from the Second World War. Work on constructing some aggregate measure had begun in the 1920s and 30s, mm-hmm. when for the first time governments, because of the Great Depression, thought they needed to have a better sense than they did of how the economy was doing. And earlier in the 19th century, there were huge business cycle downturns and nobody expected the government to do anything about it. Into the 20th century, for the first time, with the spread of the vote, people expected their government to deliver for them. So that was where the pressure came from. And in the UK and the US in particular, economists started building measures to work out what aggregate economic well-being was in some way. A dollar measure or a pound measure, what was the total economic welfare of the country? The Second World War changed the direction a little bit. If you're measuring economic welfare, the government spending money on arms instead of schools is a bad thing. It's going to subtract from the economy. And in wartime, the governments didn't want to show that happening. So they changed the definitions to just include the amount of money spent in the economy, which included the whole arms build-up in the US and the UK, and wasn't going to show the war effort damaging people's well-being. So the definition we have dates from then. But the sense of the economy as a thing that the government needs to manage is actually less than 100 years old. And we've only had any kind of measures of the total amount of activity since the end of the 17th century. But the way people thought about it was extremely different. People thought about how easy it was for the king to raise taxes to fight a war, or might have thought about trade and the amount of gold coming into the country. So the measures that we have always reflect the preoccupations of the society at the time.
Does everyone do it like we do it? There are GDP figures for countries all around the world. Do they do it the same? And when we compare our figures with you know, those of the US or anywhere, or China particularly, there seems to be a bit of competition sometimes. Mm-hmm. But is that fair? Are we comparing like with like?
They're broadly the same. The definitions are agreed in an international process by the United Nations. Mm-hmm. The way people implement those definitions can be quite different. And different countries also have different capabilities of just collecting the numbers and doing the work on them. So the poorer the country, the less resource it will put into collecting statistic, and the more uncertain they will be. And there were some great examples a year or two ago when a number of African countries were collecting better data for the first time and adjusting the figures to reflect how their economies had changed. Nigeria hadn't done it since the 1960s. And since then, it has developed a huge Bollywood industry, a huge music industry, the mobile phone sector, great swathes of the economy that weren't there before, and they added them in for the first time. So they almost doubled their apparent GDP. And of course, nobody was any better off. The reality hadn't changed at all, but the figures did. And that kind of thing does matter because the rankings affect governments, it affects geopolitics, and now that Nigeria looks like the biggest country in Africa compared to South Africa, which it knocked off the perch, that might have some diplomatic consequences. You
know. Can I ask you finally why you got interested in GDP, why you wrote this book and this history of the number? What's the interest for you?
It emerged from a previous book I wrote called The Economics of Enough that was about trying to understand why things in the economy had seemed to go so badly wrong in the financial crisis. and that sense that whatever we were doing, it wasn't sustainable. Mm. And I meant that in a broad sense. You know, the financial sector, what it was doing clearly wasn't sustainable because it fell to bits, but also the environmental sustainability and the social tensions in cities and how people were responding to immigration and so on. And one of the things I ended up concluding was that it was really hard to assess how well societies were doing in that sense because the statistics that we were using didn't reflect it properly. And so then I started burrowing into this fascinating history. And it sounds really dull, doesn't it? A history of statistics, so what could be more boring? But actually I found it really interesting, and there's great interest in the whole subject now, and there have been lots of people responding to it, big audiences when I talk about the book.
It seems like so many of these things that they appear to be about numbers, about stats, and then you look underneath and it's about people, and it's about how we live and the values that we hold within our society. But also it seems really useful when we hear this number all the time to remember that, one, it's not necessarily as concrete as you say, how we measure a mountain or the temperature. Two, that it's open to not abuse, but countries can modify it at a moment's notice, and that will reflect on them and also how they're seen globally.
That's absolutely right. And we are very swayed by numbers. We put a lot of weight on numbers because they look like they're real facts. And if we're going to put so much value on the numbers, then we ought to pay very careful attention to them. So I'm glad that people are talking about GDP.
Brilliant. Diane, thank you so much for talking to us, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.